I'm back here with my colleague, Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. This is the New World Report. Caribbean nations, battered by the most recent hurricane, Beryl, are seeking remedy in some fashion from the rest of the Americas, in fact, planet Earth, because of their vulnerability to what is regarded as the pattern change of hurricanes, damaging economies so that it's very difficult to recover. We've covered the flooding in Brazil, and now we're looking at the hurricane battering of the Caribbean. I understand weather is not climate, and climate can be debatable. What is undebatable is that these island states throughout the Caribbean are extremely vulnerable to storms such as just passed through us. Is the Caribbean integrated in with the Americas? Does it think of itself as a whole on the basis of its common language, or is this regarded as a separate entity that can seek remedy from, say, the UN or the United States, and not from the OAS or from the large, well-to-do states in South America?
Well, John, it's a great point, and it's a great question, that the Caribbean historically has been both separate and part of the region. I mean, certainly the Caribbean is incorporated through the through the Organization of American States, virtually all of the institutions of the Inter-American System, as well as new institutions like CELAC that bring together the entire region, except leaving the United States and Canada out. But as you also rightfully point out, oftentimes when we say Latin America, we're talking about Latin America and the Caribbean, but we leave that and the Caribbean off. And there is a slightly different historical legacy in that you had not just the Spanish and the Portuguese, and to a certain extent the Dutch, which had colonized South America. But in the Caribbean, you have a legacy of contention of this strategic maritime space between the Spanish and the English and the French, of course, who were involved in Haiti and in other places, and the Dutch, just to name a few. And so the result is that the linguistic heritage, as well as the cultural heritage and everything from governance to other, it reflects a bit of the British legacy, including being part of the Commonwealth. The independence movements in the Caribbean were somewhat different and came somewhat later. As the United States power expanded at the end of the 19th and in early 20th century, it was U.S. interest in the Caribbean that was particularly strong in Hispaniola and in other places, that the role in these the independence of Cuba, et cetera, et cetera. But when we talk about climate change, a key point is that absolutely, although there are many different elements of climate change, and we saw the flooding in the southeast of Brazil, we've seen the wildfires in Chile, we've seen the difficulty of drought in Argentina that decimated their crops and their crop export earnings, having a key role in Javier Milei coming to power there and the Peronists being kicked out. But one of the many dimensions of climate change is sea level rise and an increase in the number of storms. And so this year, we've already, Beryl was the earliest Category 5 storm in the Caribbean in, I think, forever. As we saw, small island states such as Barbados, such as Jamaica, and even the storm making its way in reduced form all the way up to, I believe, Houston, Texas. It was devastating, but especially for those small island states that just do not have the infrastructure to survive a Category 5 storm. And so I remember when I used to work for the William J. Perry Center for Hemispheric Defense Studies, and we would do strategic exercises and activities with our Caribbean partners. They are very conscious that the role of the armed forces and governance in essentially preparing for hurricanes and other effects of sea level rise, that for them, these are issues of survival. These are national security issues as much as just economic issues. And so this is something that the Caribbean, with its connection with Latin America, but also its very independent culture, continues to be very, very focused on this question of climate as we enter the 2024 hurricane season.
Panama, to be positive, Panama is acting wisely, if I understand correctly. They're developing an additional reservoir, anticipating the drought. We go from flooding in the southeast Brazil and in Argentina to drought in Central America, and they're investing $1 billion under the new President Mulino. This looks like a positive, the first reservoir they've built in many years, and given the criticality of the Panama Canal, which was badly choked by the drought, this looks like wisdom. And the reason I bring it up, Professor, is rather than just preach net zero, this is adapting to conditions that damage the political and financial life of the country, and they're to be praised for it. Do you agree?
Absolutely, John. When we talk about the response to climate issues, there are multiple different things, and it's not just about preparing for devastating floods and hurricanes, but it's also about what one can do with respect to resiliency in terms of the construction of seawalls or things like that. But in the case of Panama, it's the recognition that after getting severely impacted by the last year's record drought, which forced the
30 seconds, Evan. Go ahead.
Force the restriction of water boats through the canal. There's an understanding that one needs to augment the capability of the water feeding the Panama Canal, from which Lake Gaitun is not adequate. And so this long-term billion-dollar plan is reflecting the exigencies of keeping up Panama's strategic economic interest in keeping the canal open in this era of these new risks that come from drought, climate change, and various other effects.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, New World Report. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.